PA Books is a production of PCN, a nonprofit television network. Listeners like you make our programming possible. To learn more about PCN's mission and to support PCN with a donation, visit PCNTV.com. This link and others can be found in our show notes. We appreciate your support.
Welcome to the PA Books Podcast. I'm Carson Devitt. PA Books features interviews with authors on Pennsylvania history, culture, and people. In this episode, I talk with Heather Anderson about her book, Mud Rocks Blazes.
This week on PA Books, Heather Anderson, author of Mud Rocks Blazes.
Heather Anderson is the author of Mud Rocks Blazes. In your book, you detail your journey of breaking the overall self-supported record on the Appalachian Trail. What does it mean to be self-supported on the trail?
So according to the Fastest Known Time website, there you have sets of rules for setting these records. And there's three categories. The first is supported, and that means you can receive as much assistance as you can. People can carry your stuff for you. You know, people can, you know, rub your feet when you get to a stopping point. They can put food in your mouth for you. I mean, they can basically do everything except walk for you. And the second category at the other extreme is unsupported. And that means you receive no assistance from anyone. You don't even pick up supplies along the way. So you would just carry everything start to finish, except for water, the entire time, receiving no assistance outside. Self-supported falls in between those two. And essentially what it means is you can't receive support from other people, but you can set up support for yourself. So you can mail yourself resupply boxes. You can go into towns and buy supplies. You can accept random acts of kindness on the trail that aren't specifically for you. Like we call that trail magic on the trail. So if you encounter somebody that's at a trailhead handing out, you know, hamburgers to every hiker that walks by, you're welcome to take that because it's not specifically for you. It's not pre-planned. So it's kind of an in-between where you're still carrying all of your gear, all of your supplies, doing everything for yourself, but you are allowed to obtain supplies along the way.
What is it that you enjoy the most about hiking?
I think the thing I enjoy the most is just being outside in nature and just feeling very connected and content. There's not a lot of distractions or stress that comes along with that. Your decisions are very simple. You just wake up where you're supposed to be every morning, and when you get to where you sleep, you're done for the day, wherever that is. You know, you're not, yeah. And then you just wake up right where you're supposed to be the next day. It's a very simple life.
How old were you when you first started hiking?
Well, my first hikes were when I was like actual hikes. I think I probably went on some very short things growing up here and there. But my first real hike as such was when I was 20, when I was working at the Grand Canyon as a summer job. And my first long distance hike was a couple of years later. And I guess I was 20. Yeah. I was 21 when I did the Appalachian Trail for the first time.
So prior to setting the record on the Appalachian Trail, did you set any other hiking records or trail times?
I had set a few other FKTs or fastest known times. The first one I set was on the Pacific Crest Trail, and that was 2 years before I set the Appalachian Trail record. And then I had set some shorter times on various trails.
And for those who maybe don't know what a trail name is, could you tell us what is that, and did you have one while you were hiking?
Yeah, a trail name is basically a nickname that you acquire along the way. And you can either give it to yourself or people will give you one. Not everybody has one, but it is very much a part of the thru hiking, I guess, world. Most people end up with one at some point. And yes, I have several that I've acquired over the years.
What was your original goal when you set out to break the record?
On the Appalachian Trail, my original goal was actually to try to be faster than the supported female time, which at the time was, I believe, 46 or 47 days. I don't remember now. It's been a while. But that very quickly became apparent that that wasn't going to happen. I had really terrible weather when I started and a lot of flooding and high water, a lot of thunderstorms, ran into some issues with being able to cross or not being able to cross rivers when I reached them and having to wait for water levels to drop. So I very quickly fell off that pace. And from then on, it was just about doing my best and seeing where that took me, regardless of whether it was the record or not.
What did your family and friends think whenever you told them that you were setting out to set this goal?
I mean, by the time I got to setting the AT record, everybody was just fairly confident that I would do it. They were all far, far more confident than I was. I think when I first started out doing these records, they were all pretty skeptical. But after I had set a couple, then they were pretty convinced.
So how do you physically prepare yourself to take on over 2,000 miles of hiking?
Well, I mean, I think that it kind of depends on the individual and also on the trail itself. So for me personally, I stay pretty active year round. Like I run in the winters and also lift weights and do yoga. You know, I do a lot of activity. In the summers, I spend most of my time hiking and sometimes running, climbing mountains, et cetera. So I'm a fairly fit person year round. So to prepare for an FKT, sometimes it doesn't necessarily entail me changing things very much, maybe just lengthening my workouts. For the Appalachian Trail specifically, because I knew I would be starting southbound, I'd start in Maine. So I'd be doing Maine and New Hampshire, which are very rocky and technical. You know, you have to use your hands a lot. I would be starting with that. I actually focused my training on climbing mountains. I started my FKT in August. So I had the entire summer basically leading up to that to train. And at the time I was living out in Seattle, Washington. And so I was going out to the North Cascades and climbing off trail peaks pretty much as often as I could and doing very, very long days, sometimes climbing multiple mountains in a day. And that was just to get me very comfortable with this kind of scrambling movement, sport specificity training. And at the time I ran ultra marathons. So like the distance was already pretty well ingrained in my body. It was more just getting myself ready for the actual like difference of running on flat terrain versus scrambly terrain. And then, you know, once you're on the trail itself, the rest is just your body getting adapted to what you're asking for it or of it.
And you mentioned that you went southbound, so you actually started in Maine. Is there a reason why you decided to go kind of the opposite direction?
Most of the previous record holders actually went southbound. So as opposed to the traditional like through hiking style of going north, most people setting records had gone southbound. And I think most people choose to do it that way because of the fact that you're doing this really hard terrain and you're doing it at the beginning. The Southern Appalachian Trail is a little bit less rocky. It's far less technical. The whole trail is pretty rocky, but it's much less technical. You're not using your hands. It's more runnable. I didn't run on my record. I just walked. But for people who choose to like run, it's more runnable. It's smoother trail the further south you go. So I think the philosophy is generally like to get the hard part out of the way. At the beginning, you tend to go slower through Maine and New Hampshire rather than going the other direction. And the whole time you're just trying to bank miles and then you're hitting this really difficult full body terrain when you're exhausted. So I think that's kind of the general consensus. Most successful records have been southbound. There are some exceptions to that, but most people go southbound.
What did your supplies look like during your time on the trail?
My supplies, I made, at this point, I don't really remember. It was like 18 or 20 boxes of food. excuse me, before I left and mailed those to myself along the way. The Appalachian Trail, as well as some of the other long distance trails, have a very complex community around them of businesses and individuals that support hikers. And so in addition to post offices, there's a lot of businesses that will hold packages for hikers. And so you can mail yourself gear and supplies ahead. And so that was a big part of the preparation, was really just kind of calling all of these places, verifying I could mail a box, making sure it was okay, that it was there for many weeks, because I was mailing everything before I left home. And then just trying to package up the food, calculating calories, the macros, making sure that the breakdown of the food was nutritious, but also high calorie, that it had, you know, ample amounts of carbohydrates, stuff that wasn't going to spoil sitting in a box. So a lot of thought going into planning those boxes and then mailing themselves. And then, you know, it was all about making sure that I get to those places to pick those boxes up when the businesses are open.
Did you make it to every single supply box, and were they open? Did you maybe miss one of the boxes during your time?
I picked up every single box, but there were definitely a couple of times where I did have to run. I know I said I didn't run, but I didn't run because I wanted to. It was running because the store was going to close, and I literally was like kind of sprinting, you know, down the last mile of trail or whatever to get there. There were at least two places that I walked into with less than 5 minutes before they closed for the day to pick up my box. And it was, you know, kind of everything going into just getting there, because if I didn't, you know, this place closes at 6 p.m., doesn't reopen till like 9 the next morning, and then you're just stuck sitting there. Some of the towns, most of the places I sent boxes, you couldn't actually really buy food, and that's why I sent boxes. So there weren't really any options to continue on because I didn't have anything to eat. So, you know, I kind of had to get those boxes. There were a couple of other times where, you know, I came in very late at night. You know, I had to call the person, and it was a private company, and I had to call him and just ask him to put the box somewhere, because it was like a ranch. So I was like, can you please put the box somewhere where I can just access it, you know, because I'm going to come in late at night. And he, you know, put it somewhere I could get to it. So there were definitely some things like that I did have to deal with on the trail. But as far as I can remember, I got to all the boxes. It was just very difficult sometimes.
And in your book, you mentioned using your watch to kind of assist you in remembering to either eat or drink water. Could you explain how you used that?
Yeah, I did. I had just a regular, like, not a smart watch. I just, honestly, it was a kid's watch from like the kids department at a department store. And I just bought it mainly so that I had an alarm that would go off every hour. And it wasn't so much to remind me to eat, but it was more to pace me in eating, because very early on, it was more of a like reminder, but quickly I became very, very, very hungry. And so it was more just letting me know when it was okay to eat. It was basically just trying to make sure that I was taking in calories every hour and keeping my blood sugar relatively level, so I wasn't having big spikes and drops, but also, you know, keeping me in check so that I didn't just eat all of my food, because I easily could have eaten a lot. And also, you know, it's important to not eat too much at one time if you're just moving continuously, because otherwise you're going to end up with indigestion or, you know, not doing well if you just eat a bunch of food and then try to climb a mountain. So it was more of a just way to keep me consistent in my calorie intake throughout the effort, and yeah, hopefully minimize, you know, the drawbacks of eating too much at one time.
Did you always have enough food and water during your hike, or did you ever run low?
I definitely ran low a few times, mainly later in the hike when I was much hungrier than anticipated. There were also a few times where, because I fell off the pace that I had planned on from home, I didn't have enough food in my boxes to really, the box had 3.5 days of food, but it took me 4 or whatever. You know, there was definitely some situations like that. And typically when I was getting to places where I picked up my boxes, if there was like a dollar store or a convenience store or something, I was going in there and just buying some extra snacks to kind of compensate for the fact that I knew my box was going to have a little bit less food, but that wasn't always possible. And so there was definitely a time in, I guess, North Carolina, where I was racing to get to a box because it had taken me a very long time to get to that box. Like, I was going to get there that day, but I had run out of food. And so I ran into a guy who was just finishing up his trail run. And I asked him if he had any food in his car, because I was passing through the parking lot. And he literally, like, had the leftovers from his kids' lunches in his car. So he's, like, getting in his kids' lunch boxes and handing me, like, little, like, animal crackers and, like, an apple and, you know, things like that. There was another time just there were two times along the trail where I actually bought my supplies. I didn't send boxes. And I wouldn't do that again, because trying to think clearly when you're in the midst of doing something like this is actually really difficult. And so I didn't buy the right amount of food. That was in the Shenandoah. And I bought what I thought was the right amount of food, and it absolutely was not the right amount of food. I probably shorted myself like a day and a half of food. I just completely did the math wrong. And there really were no options. So I was having to ration pretty heavily through the southern part of the Shenandoah down to the Daleville interchange. And because there just weren't places you could go in and buy anything, because I had purchased in the park at kind of the last wayside. Luckily for me, this was kind of when I was around a lot of other through hikers. And so people had been putting out like coolers full of soda and things like that at road crossing. So there was trail magic. So I was getting a lot of soda, and I got some random snacks here and there to help, but I definitely had to ration pretty hard to make it to the next resupply point.
What kind of clothing were you wearing?
So I basically hike in a dress, and then I have separate sleep clothes, and then I have obviously like an insulating layer, a rain jacket. I keep my clothes pretty minimal when I'm doing something like this, and, you know, timing the hike for like the height of summer so that I don't have to worry about needing, you know, a lot of layers, because it's not going to be particularly cold.
And what kind of shoes were you wearing for this?
I hike in trail running shoes, just the things that I run in as well. I don't wear boots. I've done that since the beginning of my hiking career. I've always hiked in sneakers or tennis shoes, trail runners.
Did you ever have to replace any of your gear along the way?
I had to buy a replacement headlamp in New Hampshire because I had two headlamps, and one of them died in a rainstorm in Maine. And I had a headlamp for my head and a headlamp that I wore around my waist. And so I had to replace one of those headlamps. And I did break a trekking pole at one point and had to order new trekking poles sent to me along the way. And I can't remember anything else off the top of my head. Luckily, I was pretty well set with my gear. I didn't have too many issues with it.
Before we get further into different things that you experienced along the trail, why did you want to set the record?
I think for me, that's a really complicated question and really complex. And it's sort of hard to explain to a lot of people. But 2 years prior, I had set the fastest known time on the Pacific Crest Trail, which is actually a 2,600-mile long trail from the Mexican border in California up to the Canadian border in Washington State. And prior to that, I hadn't done any records. I had run ultramarathons, and I had thru-hiked these trails before. I had hiked them. It took me like four and a half months to hike the PCT the first time around. So I didn't necessarily know what I was getting myself into attempting to set this FKT. I didn't necessarily have anybody in my corner. There was like one friend, Dan, who believed in me from the beginning, but I think everybody else was just like, what are you doing, Heather? There was nothing really in my history that indicated that I could do this. The man who held that record, Scott Williamson, is one of the most prolific through hikers out there, and he'd hiked the Pacific Crest Trail a dozen times. And he his time was 64 days for doing the fastest known time on the PCT, self-supported. And I was basically an unknown person. And I went out and just decided that this was something I needed to do for myself. There was a lot of stuff going on in my personal life. And I just felt, you know, this need to do it. And really sort of didn't know and felt fairly confident maybe that I wouldn't succeed. And yet I did. I ended up breaking Scott's record by 4 days. And it was the first time a woman had really set a fastest known time on the PCT. And much less in a supported style or self-supported style. And so I came off of that to all of a sudden being treated very differently. And like all of a sudden I was a celebrity in the hiking world. And there was also a lot of people who doubted what I had done and a lot of criticism. And so I only much later found out that this is very common amongst high achieving women, but there's this something called imposter syndrome where you tend to not believe that you've earned things for yourself. You tend to be sort of gaslit by society. And so I very much internalized that and began to think that this was a fluke, that I knew that I had set the record on the PCT, but began to think that it was an accident, that it was just this fluke, and that the only way to really prove to myself that I could have done it was to do it again. And that's the part it's hard to explain to people. And so that's why I really decided to go out and set the AT-FKT. I was like, I need to do this again for myself and just see that, like, if I, you know, if lightning strikes twice, then it's not an accident, essentially. So I just went out and did it.
We'll be back in a moment with the PA Books Podcast.
Enjoying this podcast? Please support PCN with a donation at PCNTV.com. This link and others can be found in our show notes. We appreciate your support.
How did you plan your daily mileage to make sure that you were on track to hit your goal?
I mean, at the beginning, I took the total amount of time that I wanted to do for this record, which was, like I said, like 40, 45 days or something like that. And, you know, basically just did kind of some basic math. It wasn't completely just taking the total distance and dividing by that number, because I knew that I'd go a little slower at the beginning. I also consulted with that supported record holder's times. Jennifer Farr Davis at the time held the supported record. And so, you know, I consulted with her time, like how long it took her to do each of her days, and sort of just made some adjustments based on that. And like I said earlier, you know, that kind of fell by the wayside pretty quickly. By the time I got about halfway through New Hampshire, I was really far off of that pace and knew that at that point in time, I wasn't going to set that record. And the men's self-supported record at that time, there wasn't a woman's self-supported record. The men's self-supported record was 58 days. So, you know, beating that was the next goal. And I believe when I was in New Hampshire, I was definitely on pace to do more like 60 days. So when I knew that I was just really far off of the original pace, I did not continue to track my miles. Like I just got rid of that schedule altogether and basically just focused on doing as many miles as I felt like I could each day and still have enough left to do it again the next day. So, I mean, my goal was always to do as close to 50 miles a day as I could. That seldom happened. I maybe only did 50 miles a day. My goal was always to do 50 miles a day, and that seldom happened. I probably only did it 6 or 7 times on the whole length of the trail. But yeah, it was just more about doing my absolute best every day.
Did you ever get lost while you were hiking the trail?
Mm-hmm. I don't remember getting lost at all. I think that there were probably some places where I would make a wrong turn, but I usually realized it pretty quickly and went back. The AT is very well marked. There are white blazes on all the trees, so, or not all the trees, but regularly on the trees. So it's very well marked. The junctions are pretty well marked. I don't remember getting significantly lost on the AT. I did on my Pacific Crest Trail hike. I definitely made a wrong turn and hiked several miles the wrong way, but that didn't happen on the AT, thankfully.
Which hike did you enjoy hiking through, or which state did you enjoy hiking through the most?
Well, on my FKT, that's a very different answer than like normal. Normally Maine is my favorite to hike through, but I had a very terrible time in Maine on my record hike. So I would say probably my favorite state to hike through was, probably like the Mid-Atlantic. That's not a state, but I felt very good in the Mid-Atlantic. So kind of from, you know, New Jersey through Pennsylvania. I know most people don't like Pennsylvania, but I actually enjoyed Pennsylvania a lot on my FKT. I actually like Pennsylvania anyway, but on my FKT, yes, it was rocky, but it was actually just like kind of a very good respite from doing a lot of elevation. Pennsylvania doesn't have a lot of up and down, you know, big climbs, you know, like they do further north and further south. So I really enjoyed hiking kind of through like the New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Maryland, West Virginia, kind of that whole stretch there. Felt really good through there. And then, you know, south of there, I began to kind of fall apart again. So there was that sweet spot where things were going well and I was feeling good.
Were there any particular states that were really hard for you physically and emotionally?
Yeah, so I guess I kind of already answered that a little bit. I jumped ahead. Maine and New Hampshire were really difficult, in addition to them just being technically difficult, like physically very demanding. I had very bad weather. It poured rain every afternoon. I had bad thunderstorms. The rivers were really high. You know, I was scrambling on these rocks and they were wet. So definitely fell. And I had a lot of issues with like blisters and things like that. So yeah, those two were just extremely challenging. And then, you know, toward the end, you know, at the very the end, like that Tennessee, New Hampshire border area, that was probably the hardest emotionally. Southern Virginia into that Tennessee, North Carolina, like that was just very difficult emotionally, because at that point I was just extremely tired, very sleep deprived. I had been going for, you know, a month and a half at that point and still had a long ways to go. And yeah, just ready to be done. Kind of just the sleep deprivation catching up to me. So those areas were probably mentally the hardest.
What did your sleep look like? How many hours was it? Were you sleeping in a tent?
Yeah, I carried a tent. You know, I carried normal backpacking gear. I had a tent, a sleeping bag, sleeping pad. And, you know, I set it up every night. I think I slept inside one night. And I didn't utilize the shelters. I always tented. I think early on, I got a little bit more sleep, but definitely kind of toward the end, I was getting less sleep. I would say on average over the whole course of the hike, I probably got 4 to 5 hours of sleep per night. There were obviously some nights that I got more. When I was in Maine and New Hampshire, when I was running into issues with having to wait for the rivers to drop, I mean, there were a couple of nights where I slept 15 hours because I had to wait for the river and there was just no going through. Like the Kennebec River crossing outside Keritunk, Maine, the official trail is to take a canoe ferry across, and the canoe ferry was not operating when I arrived because there was a thunderstorm and they weren't coming back till 9 a.m. the next morning. So I was there from, I think, like 4 p.m. to 9 a.m., and I just slept the whole time. So, you know, there were a few isolated incidents like that where I got a lot of sleep, but mostly probably 4 to 5 hours. It was taking me anywhere from 18 to 20 hours a day to hike the mileage that I wanted to hike, which was at least, you know, 40 miles every day, sometimes 45 to 50.
How did that lack of sleep affect you while you were hiking?
Oh, it just made me really tired and cranky. I didn't have any issues with like hallucinations or anything like that, but just really, really just tired. I don't know, definitely cranky and definitely just feeling very, like questioning why I was doing it, feeling very, hopeless sometimes, that I wasn't even going to be able to break this record and why was I doing this to myself? And, you know, I think it just in general, lack of sleep tends to just make you feel all of your emotions a lot more. And then, when you're well rested. So definitely kind of heightened that.
Were there ever any moments where you considered just quitting and completely leaving the trail?
Definitely, especially early on when I was having all the issues in New Hampshire and Maine. What ended up being the last river crossing that was an issue at the time, obviously I didn't know it was going to be the last one, but it was another river where I attempted to ford the river. I was in the water for like a half an hour and I just couldn't get across the current. There were waterfalls downstream, so you know, I was just trying to be cautious with it, and it was like waist deep and just really strong because of all the rain. And I finally had to just go back to shore and again, like set up my camp very early. And I decided there, I was like, I'm quitting in the morning because I just, you know, I'm just falling off the schedule so badly. Like at that point I was behind Matt Kirk's time, the self-supported time. So I couldn't see how there was a way I would regain any of the time that I had lost, especially if I kept encountering rivers I couldn't cross and the water levels were high and if it just kept raining. And in the morning, I just laid there and ate all my food. And then in the morning, the river had dropped dramatically and I was able to actually get across it. And so I went into one of the huts. The White Mountains in New Hampshire have these little staffed huts throughout, and they serve food and sell basic supplies. And I bought a bunch of bars and things to replace the food that I had, extra food that I'd eaten. And I just kept going. And that was the point where I just decided that I wanted to finish the hike. And it didn't really matter if I set the record, I was just going to finish the hike. And I was going to just do my best every day, because I definitely had to have a conversation with myself about the reason I had even come out there. I wanted to break the record, but I also had wanted to prove to myself that I could do something like this, that the PCT wasn't a fluke. So while breaking the record was still the goal, ultimately it was about making sure and finding out if I could do something like this, something this difficult, and that I had that capacity. So I just continued on. And that was, you know, from there, it was all about just doing my best every day. And I honestly didn't even really know where I was in relation to the record the whole rest of the way, because I stopped worrying about that and was just pushing myself to do, you know, basically to my limit every day.
We mentioned you sleeping, but you were also hiking at night. What was that like?
I used to be really afraid of hiking at night. And, you know, by setting the PCT record 2 years before, I really became accustomed to hiking at night. And now I really enjoy it. It's very peaceful. And I mean, if you are somebody who enjoys seeing wildlife, you'll see a lot more wildlife if you hike at night. And I do enjoy seeing wildlife. So it is challenging, especially when you're tired late at night. You know, you need a lot of lighting, especially on something like the AT that's very rocky. But yeah, it just was a matter of, you know, turning on my headlamps when it got dark and just hiking until, you know, I reached the miles or the location or just got too tired to keep going. And, you know, there was a lot of times where I got to see really interesting like animals that I wouldn't have probably seen if I was out during the day. I definitely saw a lot more bears at night than I did during the day, especially on the AT. They tend to come out at night because there are so many people. They avoid people, so they'll come out at night instead of being out during the day. And yeah, so just a little bit more attention has to be paid to navigation, where you're putting your feet, that sort of thing. But it's also very solitudinous and quite enjoyable, I think.
Did you encounter any other hikers or trail angels while you were hiking?
Oh, yeah, lots. I mean, thousands of people through hike the AT every year. So I don't know that there was ever a day where I didn't see other hikers. And yeah, there's plenty of trail angels out there. I didn't really encounter as many because I was going southbound and I was at the beginning kind of with the southbound bubble, or like, you know, when most of the southbounders are going through. But as time went on, then I was ahead of them. And so then I didn't really see a lot in the way of trail angels or anything. But there were always people on the trail. Definitely. You don't go a day without really seeing people out there.
So eventually you finally make it to Georgia and you finish. What did that feel like to accomplish that?
I mean, it was a lot of emotions all at once. So it was like relief to be done. I think that's like the physical and the sort of the animal side of my body was just relief to just not have to do that anymore. And then just the mental side of feeling the sense of accomplishment and pride and, you know, not really caring necessarily about the record that much, but just finally putting to rest this doubt that I had about whether like I could do something like this, really proving to myself, you know, that I was capable and that, you know, the PCT wasn't a fluke and that the people who had convinced me that I wasn't really capable of doing this and they were wrong and it was wrong of me to believe them over my own self. So, you know, giving me a lot of confidence in my own self going forward, really. So yeah, I mean, just definitely a lot of joy and then also just, you know, a lot of exhaustion.
So what was your final time and what record did you end up setting?
I don't remember the hours and minutes off my top of my head, but it was 54 days. So I broke the previous overall record held by Matt Kirk, the men's record, by 4 days. And that record, there wasn't the women's self-supported record at that time, I think was 88 days or 80 days. It was over 80 days. So I took a lot of days off of that record. And yeah, so it ended up being 54 days.
What was life like for you post-hike?
I did a lot of sleeping and eating, but also just going back to climbing mountains and being out in nature for fun was pretty much something I did right away. I think it was less than a week after I got done that I was out. I did a multi-day peak bagging trip back in Washington State just because I can't stay indoors for too long and being outside is really important to me. So really my life wasn't a lot different when I got back. It just kind of went back to doing what I had been doing. I would say that I didn't feel this pressure to set another FKT. And I did set more, but it wasn't necessarily the sense of like pressure. It was more about, okay, now that I know I can do this, I'd like to explore it further. So there was definitely a mental shift there, but yeah, the day-to-day wasn't a lot different.
So why did you decide to write your book, Mud Rocks Blazes?
I had written a book about my first fastest known time. Thirst, 2,600 miles to home, was about my PCT FKT. And throughout that book, I definitely explored, you know, what it meant to kind of accept yourself for who you are and like this alternative lifestyle and calling. And I definitely felt like there was more to share. I was pretty overwhelmed after that book came out. And also just after I'd done my PCT hike in general, I was very overwhelmed by the number of people who reached out and were inspired by my story. And so I felt like it was important to share that second chapter, you know, why people who seemingly have achieved a lot still doubt themselves, and also what it takes to, redefine yourself for yourself. And and also to just pursue something that is very meaningful to you without necessarily any assurance of the outcome, you know, going out there and throwing away my schedule and just pushing myself to see how far I could get and to see what I was capable of, and, you know, not being invested in a goal as much as like self-exploration. So I just felt that those were kind of all themes that I wanted to explore and would be valuable to share with others. So I wrote the book for that reason.
So today, looking back on your time while setting the record, what was maybe some of your favorite memories?
Definitely a lot of the wildlife I encountered. I really like being out in nature and seeing different types of animals. So one of my favorite memories is actually in Pennsylvania, coming up from the Eckville shelter in the evening and just being surrounded by fireflies and just like hiking in like this just like cloud of fireflies. It was really beautiful and magical. That's probably to date one of my favorite memories from the whole thing. And again, you know, when I was in Tennessee and North Carolina, you're kind of back and forth across the border, so I don't actually know which state I was in, but I think it was Tennessee. And so I was within less than a week to go on the trail. So almost near the end, very tired, feeling very drained by everything. And I came across some ornithologists doing a research study. So they had set up a net that catches birds that fly through, migratory birds. And then they actually put them in brown paper, like lunch bags. It's kind of funny, but that keeps them quiet. And then they measure them and then they release them. So they were just collecting data out there, and I came by and it was just this table full of brown lunch bags. And of course I'm a thru hiker. And so I was just like, is there food in those bags? Like, what are you doing here? And they explained to me what they were doing. And I was like, oh, that's really interesting. And I had a brief conversation, and then they were like, well, we're about ready to release this one. Would you like to do it? And I was like, yes, I absolutely would. So, they taught me how to hold the bird and, you know, transferred it in my hands, and you know, so I got to hold this wild bird and like let it go, and it was really incredible. And definitely, again, just a different type of wild animal encounter that I hadn't had, but that's also one of my favorite memories, is just being able to kind of be there in that moment and have that happen. And so just a lot of really beautiful memories with regard to things like that, and just the views that I had along the way. The Appalachian Trail is very beautiful. Just a lot of just excellent memories of being in nature and being really immersed in it and feeling like you're very much part of it.
What advice would you give someone who's considering doing a fast-paced thru hike on the Appalachian Trail?
I think being flexible is really important. You know, no matter how much planning you do, and you do need to do a lot, and you will do your best to stay on that plan, but ultimately something's going to go wrong at least once, sometimes many times. And being able to adapt and stay flexible and not just give up because things didn't go as planned, I think that versatility is incredibly important. And you just have to be incredibly tenacious. You have to have this unwillingness to give up unless you absolutely have to. And this flexibility, mental flexibility and tenacity sort of maybe sound contradictory, but really they go hand in hand for doing something like this.
And you set the record in 2015. Has anyone beat it since?
Yes, several people. So I believe it was in 2017, Joe McConaughey. He's one of the outliers. He went northbound and he set the overall self-supported time. And he actually was faster than the supported time. He did what I had set out to do. And I believe that same year, there were also a couple of other men who would have broken my time, but they were slower than Joe. So I believe like three people that year actually all were faster. And then this year, Jeff Garmeyer actually broke Joe's record and going southbound. So he lowered the self-supported overall time even more. And Lila Harrod broke my record, my female record. I believe she hiked it in 52 days, but I'm not 100% sure of her time right off the top of my head. And so that both those happened this year. So yeah, there's been quite a few people in the last 10 years who have done faster times out there.
So for my last question, I have to know, would you do it all over again?
Not having already done it, once is enough. But, you know, if I was in that situation again, the exact scenario, then yeah, I would have absolutely done this the same way. But, you know, having answered my questions about myself, I have no desire or need to go out and do the ATFKT again, not in that style. No.
We've been speaking with Heather Anderson about her book, Mud Rocks Blazes. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Listeners like you make PCN programming possible. Full episodes of PA Books, as well as other PCN programs, are available to stream with the PCN Select app. To learn more about PCN's mission and to support PCN with a donation, visit PCNTV.com. This link and others can be found in our show notes. We appreciate your support.